Welcome, everybody. This is BNP Weekly. It is episode 96. It's a special cabin fever edition. So I'm calling from one of the locations which we can use, so to say, by the sea in Baltic. Is it Baltic or Finland? I can, yeah, whatever
yes.
It is in Finland.
Yes, it is.
I think it is. Yeah. Anyway, so it is, what day is it? 14th?
September 14th.
Yeah, here we go. I'm officially on vacation, so I'm trying to be have a vacation outside of the office for a few extra days. So back to business tomorrow. But let's do a quick intro. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint platform team. And with me as a co-host here, showing it to you, Valdek.
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Valdek Mastrikas. I am head of product at Rancor. And today we have a guest from, so suspectingly, sunny Belgium. I think I see a little bit of sun coming at you, Yannick Plenevaux. Welcome, Yannick.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. So as you said, my name is Yannick Plenevaux. I'm working for my own company as a, let's say, Microsoft 365 solution architect. So basically from consulting to architecturing solutions around Microsoft 365 and Asia, and all the consulting side work that could bring. And yes, here in Belgium today, it's quite sunny. So,
cool. Yeah, the weather is good in Europe, clearly, because I have sun at zero, and then Netherlands seems to be sunny. So
it's going to be a whole week of summer here. It's going to be like tomorrow and the day after is going to be 30 plus Celsius. So
yeah, really?
Yes, the summer is back for a week.
Yes.
Oh, you're lucky mid Europeans. We don't have that in Finland. So anyway, let's not talk about the weather. and as well. Anyway, so Yannick, you went independent a few years back. Can you talk about why? What was the driving force? Why did you went independent? And what was the learnings related on what worked and what didn't?
Yep. So basically, I have been working in consultancy for about 10 years. And the last company I was working for was a really small team. And we basically realized with my colleagues at the time that with a few guys, we can manage many aspects. And the history made that those guys I was working for left the company, and I basically was alone at the end. And I still can continue to do my work with the customers I had. And the vision of was not for expanding the team anymore in this company. So I decided to go on my own and continue exactly the same business, developing stuff and consultancy and designing and helping and coaching about Microsoft 365, SharePoint on-premises, and SharePoint online. Mm-hmm. And basically focusing much more on cloud solutions compared to what it used to be, mainly more on-premises. And it was definitely the good choice and the good vision, because now, for example, with the situation, I have still plenty of work. That with on-premises solution, it wouldn't have been that easy, and now I still have. So, but yes, and it has been going well. And regarding what went well, what went not, I think most of it went pretty well. Customers still want to work with me. What went not well? It's not. I would not say that it didn't go well. But yes, things that I had to learn about managing, about for instance the administrative tasks like issuing invoices and see how to declare expenses and so on, the things that I typically had no clue of how it just worked. But
I think everybody is suffering on that one and realizing then that it takes surprisingly much time on doing invoicing, administrative
exactly.
things, the official financing, and then sales, which is all away from the fun stuff. So writing code and actually delivering stuff for the customers. So.
Yeah, and I think it also, like, it gets even worse the moment you have employees, because then you have exactly the same thing twice, plus their days off, healthcare, social insurance, and all of that. And sure, like, you can hand it off to someone else, but given it's your company, at the end of the day, like, you need to know what you're responsible of, right? You have to understand it at least to some point, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And actually, yes, it is typically that, because I don't have to deal with advanced accountability things, et cetera, because I an accountant that does that for me. But for instance, simply the fact that he needs all the invoices, the received invoices to be collected, and then make sure that I take everything and I give them everything. This kind of thing takes a few hours per month, and typically it looks like a waste of time for me, but it has to be done. And also, I tend to collect them right away when I receive them, but there is always that thing that is missing, or that. And so, yes, it takes time just to make sure that I have the good invoice at the right place, for instance. But and also for the timesheet, now I have only one employee other than myself. Yes, I have to make sure that I coordinate, for example, the days off and so on. But it goes quite smooth. Definitely it takes time, apart from the actual work that I have to do.
The one thing that I'm interested in with, like, so there's also another aspect to, like, working for having a company, acquiring assignments or engagements, right? So to what extent, like, because you've been around for a few years, you are also an MVP, you are part of PMP, so your name is out there. To what degree does that help you get engagement versus to what extent do you still need to, like, proactively get out there and acquire new customers?
Yes, actually it helps, because I receive sometimes some demands and so on. But for now, I don't leverage it as much as I can, because I have already too much work.
That's a positive problem. Yeah.
So that is a positive thing. And also I will have at some point probably to make sure that I have enough resources, hiring more people maybe, in order to address those demands that are coming. Hopefully for now it's not, it's punctual assignment here and there, but that's not that much for now, but definitely it does.
So the wildest question, sorry to trill actually on it, the wildest question is really good, related on, is it beneficial to be visible in the MVP ecosystem and in social media, or is it time away from actually billing? So what's your perspective on that?
I think for now, the customers that I have, two of them were customers that I already had. So definitely they like the fact that I'm more visible, I would say, and they it confirms that they made the right choice. I'm saying that, but on the other hand, yes, I have other customers that didn't know anything about me, and especially across the world. Also, my company is based in Luxembourg, so I had Luxembourgish customers mainly. Now I have at least opportunities that open up all around the world for cloud, in the domain of cloud, yes, it makes more sense than not being limited to a particular local market. And so definitely it helps. I see that I ask more and more information about how I would do that and so on. And sometimes also trying to ask something more about my community work and asking advice, etc., that sometime I could build.
Right.
Well, that's always a challenge. Absolutely. How do you actually deal with that stuff? Also, Brianne, you're a good example, and I know Waldeck is a good example of it being really active in the open source and driving communities and driving the open source projects. How do you deal with the question of, okay, is this billable or is this not billable? Actually, that's a question for both of you, because it's actually a really interesting topic, because it's one of those things where, how would you differentiate when it's billable and when it's open source?
Well, I mean, for me, it's simple. I don't bill customers.
Well,
so,
sure. In your
so
case,
nothing that I do is billable.
Yeah,
like, so the only thing we could see it is as to what extent my work is a research kind of investment that I could then bring out to the things that I do. And I think it is, right? Because like there's, so from my point of view, it's twofold. Right? One is the sheer knowledge and experience that I gain doing things. Yeah. But two, and I think that is less tangible, is the marketing side of it, the exposure, the trust that I build with community that could or for a part might even contribute to the company I work for being able to sell our services and products because people trust me and people behind it. You know, so and that is right, like really hard to put finger on, because like how do you measure that and track that? You know, so like that will be the two sides that I see of it. You, Yannick?
Yeah, but on my side, I think as I said, it brings some confidence and some trust from the customer to be someone that works in the community that is acknowledged, I would say, the work and so on. The effort that I put in community projects, I'm sure will be leveraged in some of my billable projects, because I use the PNP Sitescore, I use PNP PowerShell, I use the Swift CLI for deployment pipeline and so on. Apart from that, I also think that it is kind of investment that is not, there is no return directly in it. I mean, there is no invoice from it, but I know that it will help for building faster and easier solutions based on this. So I take it as part of investment of the work I will do later. But I think that on both sides, it helps for the trust in my, let's say, quality, if I dare, but also definitely with what I will be using in my project. And also, for instance, like the site design studio that I built, there I have open source edition, I would say, and I have one that is, let's say, officially supported for customers. So yeah. I have like a kind of a business channel for this,
mm-hmm.
and it works as the, basically the solution is the same, but I try to put as much effort as I can in the community work, but I cannot allow my whole week on it. So
right. Yeah.
Some parts have to be.
I'm sorry, Yannick. That's actually really interesting perspective. Not as an exception, but rather as a discussion point, because there's a lot of companies who are saying, why would we allow our employees to actually do open source? Because it's not invoiceable. It's not actually generating revenue or
well,
money.
Well, that is one, and two, like we give away the IP for free.
Correct. That as well. So that's a really interesting discussion point. So and obviously most of the companies are still thinking this way, but then we're seeing a growth being active on the open source, and Microsoft is obviously getting to be more and more open source. But why should companies do this? And are we seeing a growth? Are we seeing decline? Are we seeing interest? How does the future look like from this perspective? Let's start with Waldeck.
I think that So from the company's point of view, I don't see a huge change in there. I think that at the end of the day, it comes down to employees and their preference, their interest to get that. And I think for them, it's a huge chance to learn, to get to work with people with whom otherwise they might not have no chance to work, and basically get exposure and acknowledgement of their skills. So basically gain standing in community, like be a part of something bigger than is them that maybe spans even beyond the company they work for. And from there, they can learn more and also bring these additional insights inside the company and get basically additional perspectives. So I don't think that there is a huge shift in companies adopting open source more. I think with the adoption, there is the usage. But to actually take part in open source, I don't think that there's really a company-driven choice rather than something that an employee might want to do because they like PNP, they use PNP, and they want to like share their part of effort, right? It's not a company trend. I think it's employee trend. I think it's just a person trend.
Sometimes you have some vision from decision maker that does not follow the thing, but I think I used to work in a company where the manager was not at all like this, and they had about 30 or 40 SharePoint specialists, and now they have one or two. So I think it gives some hints of what the vision can lead to if you're not trying to follow up with the trends in the community and the industry, etc. For instance, you can use almost everybody now use, for example, PNP PowerShell or the CLI and PNP PowerShell for the provisioning engine and so on, and they tend to use it because it already does a ton of work that would take years of work to redo the same thing. So why would we reinvent the wheel, and why would we make investment on doing stuff that can already be done by just using a command? Yeah. And whenever it doesn't work or there is a bug or anything, but you can invest this time on fixing it. And hopefully we'll share it with the community to improve the overall product, because all the effort that have been made by dozens or hundreds of people in the community, you leverage in your own work, and then you can contribute back by fixing just a bug, typo, anything. I have a typical example of, and it was already like 3 or 4 years ago, I was in one of my projects. I used the PNP SiteScore, and we realized with the customer that it is a single page app, and after a few hours working on their app, they could not create their document anymore. And we realized it was a tiny typo in the PNP SiteScore that prevent the token to be acquired. And just by changing one character, I fixed the bug with this and contributed back. But initially, I had something that was already handling authentication and uploading document with a few lines of code that I would have done differently. I would have spent several hours, several days, maybe on implementing that. So I think there is really a win-win situation by taking what has already been done, and then if you spot something, rather than building your own thing, your huge framework or whatever, you can just sit on top of existing one and improve it. And it is beneficial for everyone. So I understand this thing about giving the IP for free, but it's not really the trend anymore, at least in what I'm seeing in the community. Maybe there are some guys still in their own bubble outside from all the community things that still don't see the value. But I hope they will at some point realize that.
And when it's a kind of a baseline component or something which should be there, like BMP type score, the classic one, which has the provisioning engine and everything else, to be honest, and me as a Microsoft employee can say this probably the best, that we should have something similar natively within the product. And yes, we do in certain levels side designs, but it's not sufficient. So it's addressing a business scenario, a technical gap within the product. But it's not specific IP. Like, well, shouldn't you be able to provision Microsoft Teams stuff and SharePoint stuff and all of that? Well, absolutely. Absolutely, you should be able to do it. So why wouldn't we have something like that? Is that a unique IP and intellectual property of a company? Well, no, it's about provisioning. It's not really unique as such. And that's where the BMP site score and provisioning engine actually even originally came, was like, well, we should have this, so let's actually build that together. So.
Well, and I think it all originates from the point, right, when there was nothing in open source, right? Or at least in our space. Like everybody, yeah. Like every company would probably have their own way to provision something from a template.
Yeah.
And then at some point, PNP came out and leveled the field, saying, "Hey, now there's this engine, which happens also to be very powerful and versatile. It's available for everybody to use for free." Well, that levels the field because everybody who really held tight to their IP is like, I mean, we can never do things as quickly as legion of people across the world who work on PNP. So let's go, okay, so what is so that levels the bar. Like, okay, so what is the next step that we do? And I guess that the IP is then in specific solutions that you build, like specific templates, how you compose different things. So basically everything you build on top. But the sheer idea of let's create something from a template, like it's exactly as you said. It's amazing that you might expect to see in product. On the other hand, if there are APIs, I'd rather have the product group build something that only you could do, as opposed to take work away from community that we can do too, right? So in other words, like if you give us the APIs, we can do it. But if imagine Cortex, like we cannot do it, or it would take us so much more time because we might not have all the different hooks into service that are needed for that kind of thing. So I'd rather have you focus on these things and let us do things that we can do, then try to do everything. Because at the end of the day, the same as everybody else, even Microsoft with their scale, you have limited resources. You cannot do everything.
Yeah.
Right? So what?
What do you mean? What do you mean?
No. Something's changed.
No. Yeah, but that's good perspective, absolutely. And then building the stuff together. I think we have 1,500 contributors already in the BMP initiative worldwide in the scale of 6 years. So it actually shows the scale, and it shows the way community is actually actively participating, and the growth is there. So there's more and more projects, more and more people contributing. But coming back on what Yannick said, coming back on the discussion point, I think that for the companies, it's an interesting trend. We're seeing more and more companies being actively promoting for their employees around the opportunity of contributing as well, which is great.
Really?
I would say we're seeing technically more US-based companies being more active, kind of realizing that, well, this is a great way. And then because then when you allow your employees to do that, then they want to actually stay in the company, because that gives you people freedom of innovating and contributing, being part of something bigger, and then without basically limiting their opportunities. I think we have had certain cases and certain contributors who had issues related on their contributions even, and that their employees was basically saying, no, we own everything what this person does. Well, what happens when as long as they work there, well, guess what? They don't work actually there that long when you start being not behaving properly. Yeah. So, and we've seen that with some of the people who've been active on the community. So, but yeah, giving that opportunity, giving that innovation. And to be honest, most of the time we spend the 40 hours, 45, 50, 60, whatever people are working in the week, should be working too much. But anyway, the stuff what we spent is actually boring. But then being able to work on something unique, something special, something different, then gives people more context for their day-to-day work. Absolutely.
Well, and I guess it's like for a part, you could even argue that it's all about impact, right? Like if you build something for a customer, well, that will impact maybe your own team and them. But here with BMP, you can impact anybody across the world. Like whatever you contribute, like everybody else in the world will be able to see it and use it, right? So you can make that much more of a stamp, a mark, than just work on your own thing that maybe someone will use, maybe not, and in 3 years' time it will be gone.
Yeah, and you are basically selling yourself and selling your skills by contributing to this thing. Yeah. You learn tremendous amount of things every day. I work in a community work with a team. I see new stuff. I see new ways of doing things and so on. And also, what you push will be reviewed or at least discussed by the other people from other companies. Bigger company you are working for, maybe not Microsoft, but I mean typical institutions and so on, you have like 30, 40, 50 developers, something like this. It's definitely less insight and less experience than what you can find in the entire world from many origins, from many backgrounds and so on. Yeah. So you have definitely an advantage to taking the insight from people outside of your technical bubble, I would say. With when you work in a team, you tend to think the same way in the team as your colleagues, and sometimes you focus too much on a thing that because you run into an issue, and then you don't have that insight that my external people might have because you're focusing on business cases, business solutions, and so on. And then you don't realize that there are other technical approaches and so on. And it's one of the things that I really like in this community engagement and even on Twitter and so on, discussion for many aspects to have feedback that I wouldn't have even thought about.
And especially in 2020, when everybody is working from home remotely, we don't have that opportunity of actually being in a one office room or one office space and then innovate because everybody is working remotely. And I think actually, when I think about that one, that's even, well, obviously, hopefully the situation will go back to normal and everything else. But the fact that we're working remotely basically levels up everything because it doesn't matter where you actually call in. It doesn't, I'm as a example, this, you can work from anywhere nowadays, and that's amazing. You can actually do that because as long as you deliver, it doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter are you actually physically located in the same city or are you physically located in
that area. That requires also the company to have the mindset, right? That the company you work for, your management chain has the trust, and they don't expect to see you in an office. Because even if you are in an office, like who's to say that you are not playing Pong the whole day, or I don't know, doing patience or ice sweeper.
Because of course you would be playing Pong. Nothing, anything.
It's just for the fact that like sitting physically in an office is no guarantee for proper
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I guess but it still requires companies to adjust the mindset and basically giving the employees trust that they will do the right thing.
Yep.
It should work in both ways. I mean, I have a lot of example of companies that are working very more efficiently while remote because we go straight to the point and we don't have that never-ending meetings and so on for taking decisions, and we want to achieve the objectives and so on. And on the other hand, I have heard about many things that people are not just working. Some people are not just working, and sometimes because they don't want to, sometimes because they can't handle the mix family life and work life and so on. And so there are many reasons. And I think yes, as you said, the mindset have to change from the decision making level on how to trust, how to measure the achieved work and so on. And it will help. But this situation is the perfect opportunity to change this. And I hope that it will. We see already some changes in big companies, Microsoft and Google and so on. We see all these mindset of working from home is the new norm until that date or whatever. But I think it's the best opportunity to change this. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's interesting to see whenever the situation settles, that how much will balance out the remote working versus the office working. And then it's actually kind of awkward also that all of the offices are going to open office model and now going back maybe then to individual rooms.
Closed office, that's the yes.
so hey, we'll see how it goes forward. So you never know. So should we do some articles? Quickly,
yes, let's do articles.
Let's get back on things. So let me share my screen. I'm only on a one screen. This is so awkward. Because I'm so used to have at least
five screens, eight screens, exactly. Surrounded by screens.
Exactly. I think we're good.
Yes, we are.
Excellent. So this one was from the SharePoint blog, and there was a nice podcast from Mark Cashman, IntraZone podcast, which they actually. I think they release stuff almost weekly or bi-weekly or whatever is their frequency. But there was a nice discussion with Shane and Chris Kent on being a maker rather than developer. And Shane Young, well, he's a really, really old school SharePoint person who's been now working more on the Power platform, so on the Power apps, and talks about his learnings on that. And Chris Kent has ended up being the list guru, which is actually interesting as well, because he's actually a developer, but then he ended up actually doing a lot of the list demos and list column formatting and view formatting demos. And now he's the list and view formatting guy, which is fine, probably. And I know that it's fine for him as well, but it's kind of like it was never planned. It just landed up on that position. So, but good podcast on talking about makers, so talking about the low-code, no-code options of configuring things, automating things. So good stuff from there. Now, the next one, this isn't really interesting. I don't know, did either one of you actually already have a chance to check it out? So Fluid Framework is now open source, and it's available in the GitHub. Did you have a chance on checking things?
I looked at it. I had a look at examples. It sounds intriguing. I'm yet to wrap head around it and have like a proper use case within M365 for this to be used. Like, I get it. It's neat for things like co-authoring in apps like Word, PowerPoint. But for partners to build applications on top of that, I think that is interesting. Like, what kind of things we could do with that? Like, what would be the practical way to apply that in things we build?
Yeah. There was a we did deliver the Dev Kitchen a year ago. I think it was in October and November, whenever we were still traveling and meeting people face to face. But we had a Dev Kitchen in Redmond together with Fluid Framework people, and that was really interesting to see the innovation and ideas what people came up with. And sure, there was a interesting set of business scenarios, and then there was non-business scenarios, which was around games and the kind of a working together. With the Fluid Framework, basically, because you have that real-time go offering or collaboration, and you can see what other people are doing at the same time. So it's kind of cool. But it's really interesting to see what people are coming off at this one now that it's
open. And then there's another aspect to it, right? Because it's this tech, apparently, is also a very unique way to address problem like how do you work synchronous or work simultaneously with multiple people on the same thing. And the team released a few articles in which they explain the background thinking behind framework, like how do they approach the problem space And that is very intriguing. So it's not really explaining like what can you do with that, but thinking behind from like, why is it there? What problems are there in the field and how this solves that? And it's what's really interesting, like, huh, that is really cool. So it's like a really cool piece of tech. And now it will like we need to work back from that. Okay, so now we have it. Now we have this power. What will we do with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really cool stuff, and good to see that this is now open source. It is, by the way, using Node.js v12, and unfortunately, SharePoint framework is still in Node.js 10, and we need to address that. So that's after that being addressed.
Because soon there will be Node 14.
So, I know. Okay, moving on things. So this one we released last week as well. So a week ago or 2 weeks ago, we had the BMP virtual conference. And last week, we basically shared the all of the recorded sessions. And it's good to see the high interest. Chris Kent, by the way, was the winner in evals, surprise, surprise, with his list formatting things, which is in line with the makers blog post as well. So. But it's really great to see the interest. And this one wasn't really intended to be competing around Ignite or anything. It's really around getting started on using things so people understand the value of components and controls and open source projects and all of that. So that's now out as well. Now, related on Fluid Framework, the Microsoft 365 Developer Podcast had a podcast with Fluid Framework together with Dan Walling. Waldeck, do you want to introduce who's Dan?
Well, so
have it done actually.
Exactly. So Dan was our guest a few weeks back. He's now one of the M365 dev advocates, and he's focusing on the Fluid Framework, where he right now works together with the team to basically have samples and content on that. And then as framework evolves, we can expect more training material, videos, and so forth, and the one coming from Dan. So
Really cool stuff. Absolutely. Now moving on next one. This one was from Jonas. Jonas actually used a BNP weekly hashtag. He used a different one, so we missed it on the time it was actually released. But I found it, so I wanted to raise it up in here. How to set up a modern document library view to tiles mode programmatically. So basically, list formatting, but then using programmatic way of setting things up. So here we're using set BMP view and configuring things, basically those settings. So here where we're actually doing that stuff. So, well, is it programmatically if it's using PowerShell?
Yes, it is. It's not clicking. So it's programmatic.
Well, that's true. Okay.
Automatable.
Absolutely. Now, moving in here, we had a new version of the CLI for Microsoft 365. Still, this is going to take a year to learn the new name.
It's going to take you a year. Everybody else is already switched. So we have new version, new preview version of 3.1 with a command to list all Power Apps apps. Is that how you say it? Do you list all Power Apps or do you list all Power Apps apps?
Exactly.
So we have that. We have few additions around docs. So we recently removed the immersive view where you would have your own command prompt for CLI. Now you just execute directly a command, basically the same way you would work in PowerShell. And we extended all samples of our code to actually start with the M365 alias, so that when you grab a sample, you can just copy paste that in command line and it works. And there is no need for you to, like, add something to it, right? So that is a huge update towards like making it easier to reuse all of our samples. And then we had a few fixes around long-running operations and supporting JSON files with BOM, because apparently parsing that by default fails.
Okay, cool. Really cool stuff. Let's actually move on things. Now, this one, we didn't talk about this one too much yet, Yannick, but do you want to actually explain what is the BMP Core SDK and what's your role on this work?
Yes, so this is a project that has been initiated by Bert Janssen and Paolo Pelosi. It is basically a new .NET library that is fully based, built on .NET standards, so meaning that it will be easy to use in every modern .NET technologies like ASP.NET Core, Azure Functions, V3, Blazor, and so on. So all the modern .NET technology targeting to be really in line with the upcoming .NET 5. And yep. It is basically a library that uses Microsoft Graph or the SharePoint REST API with this mindset of being graph first. So whatever is possible with Microsoft Graph, it will be done with Graph. If it is not yet available in Graph, then it will use the SharePoint REST API. For instance, on the SharePoint side, we have still quite a few things. I was going to say a lot, but yes, like the field, the content types, and many artifacts in SharePoint that are not really completely manageable through Graph. So this library will do both, and it is currently in preview. We are aiming the preview 3 end of this month, and it is focused on Teams, Microsoft Teams, and SharePoint, and trying to make it really easy for developers to work with the modern team sites and the Teams and the SharePoint underlying it. So you will be able to do whatever you want in Teams and in the underlying SharePoint with just by saying, okay, I want to connect to this group. You configure it with the group ID, for instance, and you have the context and you can do the request against almost seamlessly against SharePoint or Microsoft Graph. And it is trying to get get a fully object model, a full object model, and we try to make it as easy as it can be for developers and as seamless as it can be for developers, not knowing if it is Graph or SharePoint. And because we have CSUN, we have the Microsoft Graph SDK, for instance, but on my hand, for example, I used to work a lot with data in Graph and data in SharePoint. And then I have to reference in my project CSUN and then the Microsoft SDK, and then you have dependencies issues about, for instance, the Newton sub-JSON and so on and so on.
Yes.
And if you add the PNP site score, for instance, that has also its dependencies on Newton Surf, for instance, and some other dependencies as well, then it tends to be really difficult. So in this project, we are focusing also much on trying to get rid of as much dependency as we can. So and relying mainly on what we have in the .NET standard set of libraries.
So if you think about the old PNP site score, it has existed for 6 years, and it's part of the evolution has brought it to where it is right now. And this is clean start. This has nothing to do with the old one. But starting from a clean table, targeting .NET 5.0 and simplifying things. And so really cool stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. You've been active in here. Bert Janssen been active here. Paul Pollock has been active in here. Yarbus has been really active from Follow Intranet. So it's good to see that it's growing. So.
Yeah, and we are definitely looking for more contributors. So I encourage anyone that would be interesting. I really see it as a library that can be, at some point, some kind of successor for CSUN. So. Yeah. Yeah, maybe just an ambitious goal in my head, but I think it might be.
One step at a time.
Sure,
it's good to have a vision. So it's good to have a vision and the direction where we're heading, and then it looks really, really awesome. So really, really great. Thanks, Yannick, on that one. So, moving on things. So Marky Anderson had a storm on an old work host that's still valuable. What is this? Waldeck, help me.
So there is, if you look at the second paragraph and the image, an application page that allows you to quickly understand the size of your sites, like how much storage does each of your sites take. into account, right? So so that is like if you plan capacity, for example, you need to plan room for the backups. If you do that, then this tool, like, or this application page, which is available out of the box, is a great way for you to quickly understand how much size each site takes.
So. Yep, absolutely, absolutely. That is a pretty massive site, actually, 800 gigabytes. So, but great, great. And this is out of the box capability, underscore layout, storm, and it actually gives you the insights on that. So really cool. Cute. This one, extract Microsoft Teams theme as a PMP template. And this is from Gautam.
Gautam Sheth, yeah.
Yeah, so this is really around the fact that you can actually use the PMP tenant templates also with Microsoft Teams, then you can actually extract the Teams template as well. And then you will have a JSON or XML definition of that theme. So you are able to then apply or duplicate that same setup to any other theme as well. So really cool stuff as well. So explaining the PowerShells and how it actually works. And then if you use code, how it actually works as well, and then taking advantage of that. So really cool, absolutely. Now, this one is from the recording at 365 from Sarah, Microsoft List Round Robin with Mark Cashman, Microsoft List Q&A. And there's a lot of questions related on Microsoft List, how it works and what does it actually do. And this one is basically around having those answers, questions answered. That's the right way of saying that.
So. Yes.
But technically, I think it was actually on, it was, who had it? It was a really brilliant, Tracy actually had the fact that it was the let's see who's behind of the Microsoft List. And then
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo. That was really great because it is SharePoint List behind the scenes. It's just being basically served through the a different UX and different access point. And the SharePoint lists are matching with Microsoft lists. Microsoft lists are having exactly the same capabilities as SharePoint lists. So it's intended to be one-to-one.
And there's also this interesting thing, like folks ask, okay, so but why would you like keep reusing the old tech? Well, being the benefit, like if you think about the scale of things, like you get for free all the things like APIs, retention, records, policy, security, you get all that for free.
Yep.
Whereas comparing, like, imagine you want to build something brand new from scratch, let's say, on storage in Azure. Well, then you need to implement all of that, too, to make it really a part of an enterprise suite, which lists are already in, right? So
absolutely. And that's actually a really good point, because even internally in Microsoft, I don't know what's public and what's not, so I'm not going to actually talk about exact details, but we're moving more and more actually using SharePoint storage as the system for storage. So basically files and all of that. And the question is, why are we doing that? Well, because
compliance.
It falls directly into compliance. It has all of the security, everything else inside of it. It has the labelings and so it's
you get all of that for free.
Exactly. As long as you put it in there, it's all free. If you put it in a separate storage system, well, then you need to start thinking about the integration and all of that stuff. So it's much more
permission
difficult.
Management, and it's not trivial to do it basically the right way. So
good. Moving on to things. So this one is from Peter, related on create a SharePoint list using Power Automate. So how do we actually create SharePoint lists using the send HTTP request the SharePoint post? So basically posts. Well, we're doing a REST operation towards SharePoint and then creating a list and automating things. So really cool stuff as well. Huge. And then the last thing was an interesting thread related on during the weekend, which was if you use Microsoft Teams at work, do you use any applications from the marketplace? And this is opened up by this person called Waldeck. So, but this is actually a really interesting thread. It's not a massively long yet, but there's quite a nice set of answers on why are people using and why they're not using. So what's the, let's say, summary on this one about that.
So yes, the TLDR is that there are groups who would like to use but can't because of the IT is locked things down there. One, they're afraid of getting something in. They have no way to tell what's being pulled, what these applications do before approving them, or not even approving them, just allowing you users to use them.
Yep.
And two, like there are odd exceptions that are open. They're like, yeah, like we can use whatever we want. We just don't find anything in there. Like we tried a few things. We tried this, we tried that, but it just didn't stick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think like these are the two camps.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's good summary on the discussion. I think that's always the challenge of finding what's the use case and what's relevant. And sure, we as a Microsoft, we need to do a better job of even surfacing these things and solutions. Like, hey, it seems that you're doing X and Y and Z. Have you
Clippy?
Realized
we need Clippy back. Hey, I see you're trying to do X. Would you like an app for that?
I'm gonna start the presenting, so we can actually go back on the video. That's actually a great idea. So Clippy for Microsoft Teams. But it would be a bot or something. Anyway. So I think that's an interesting challenge which all of the app store providers have, which is it doesn't matter if you have a massive amount of store apps. The question is, are people using them, and how would they know that the stuff exists? So what can we do to make it easier for partners to actually get visibility through the store?
Yeah, and also too, like address these, like you can call it lack of trust, but I think it comes down to like how can you help admins in companies understand what they're pulling in? Because I think like at the end of the day, like that is the bottom line. It's not that they're not trusted, but it's like trust but verify, and currently there is no way for them to verify that.
Yep.
Other than like have a test tenant install the app, and even then you're looking just at surface, but you cannot look like what is beyond the waterline, you know?
Yeah.
I think the difference compared to what we had in the past is that it's more cloud oriented. I mean, with direct access to internet and maybe some fear of data leakage and so on. But usually, typically, it is what we all the IT department have been doing with software for forever. I mean, when they were installing SharePoint, they basically don't know what every bit that SharePoint is doing on the farm and so on. So, but it's a product that they trust Microsoft, they trust the product, and they want to use it. But the two things is that it has now, let's say, access to internet, and there are potentially a myriad of providers that cannot be as, let's say, trustable. At least they are not known as much as, for instance, Microsoft. And so how can we trust them?
But I think it's also a twofold thing, right? Because like one is we're looking currently, we talk about apps that you can pull in from the marketplace, install, for example, in Teams and integrate that in Teams, meaning this application might have access to some of the data that you have stored in 365. But on the other hand, so imagine that I am not allowed to do that, but I might just go to another SaaS app that is not related to M365, just use there, and I can deliberately put my company data in there. Because I will invite my colleagues and our names and our emails are exposed there. Maybe we collaborate on a project. So, and we leave all of that there. And that is, in my my mind, like that is even worse because the IT has no way to govern that. They don't even know that it's there. So I think that like the user need is there. People will try to find way around like to solve problems that they have with the tools that they have. And if they cannot do it here, well, they will do it elsewhere without IT even knowing that it's there, right?
The shadow IT topic that
we've seen in
many conferences and so on. And I think if IT departments, whether or not they want to keep strict control, they have to offer the possibility for people not to try working them around.
But it's maybe in a way comparable to like, you know, nowadays people think about like if you will be breached or not, like if you will be hacked. Well, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So maybe the mindset needs to be applied to apps too. Like it's not if people will use third-party apps. No, it's like when and which apps do they already use, of which you don't even know because they don't use a corporate login, they don't use SSO because they are not allowed to. But where do they work anyway? Sure. I mean, like in the past where everybody was in the office, like you might have been able to monitor that through traffic and firewalls and access points and like basically go through all the logs and see URLs people access. Nowadays, where everybody's at home, it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So why not facilitate that and let people work where everybody is, with the idea that you can track that and you know where the data goes and you know which vendors have access to some of the data.
Yep. But I think it's education for people.
It is. It always is. It's a people thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a human thing. It's not a technology thing. It's certainly a human challenge to understand and be educated enough to understand the challenges and understand the benefits and disadvantages of different options. So.
Absolutely.
But we'll get there. Now, from a timing perspective, I think it's good to actually close up so we don't take too long again. So what's happening this week? Anything interesting on your side?
Yannick?
Working as usual my week. I'm working on some projects. So I also work as a customer for Valentin with Java, I have a task assigned for the next release. We shipped the release last week, I think, or the week before, and so now I have my task planned for the week. So I have still a lot to do and still a lot of development that. So it's good that I know what I will be doing for the whole week, because it's not always the case. Depending on the weeks, I sometimes have to deal with multiple customers and multiple cases and mindset switch from day to day.
That's always hard.
So this week at least I know what I will be doing.
Cool. Waldeck, what are you planning to do this week? Anything interesting?
Well, always. So
what are you planning to do is different than what are you doing, of course. So
yes. So like as you usual, we have some work on CLI. Like for a few weeks now, maybe even more, we're working on removing the package that we used as a base for CLI. So basically, we used something to start the work on, and now we're yanking it out.
Okay.
Because realities of life, like that thing isn't maintained anymore. And we have the choice to like, okay, so do we want to maintain this ourselves? Well, not really, because we don't know it. And frankly, it's all tech, right? So we decided, okay, so how about we go another route and we yank it out? And there's like, you can imagine, like there is this humbling thing about trying to refactor anything at scale. Like if you have 10 classes, it's nice. What if you have 400 of them?
Yep.
And then you have, and then you have 8,000 tests.
Yep.
And so suddenly all of them break. Well, you need to like be creative, like, okay, so how you go about that? So we're closing in on getting everything in shape again, where we can have a version without the baseline. So that's on my plate. I'm working on that. And other than that, we're working on more things for CLI, more commands, more improvements. We have some PRs still open, so we'll be going through that. And there are still some new ideas on my mind that I'm bouncing around and trying to find hours in a day. So
yeah, always a challenge to find the right time to do cool stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now on my side, I am on vacation today, as you can see. So
it's cabin fever. Where you are in the cabin, we have fever.
Yes. Funny enough, it was really horrible weather for the weekend. Now we're heading home right after this call, and it's because it would
one
be
more day,
weather.
One exactly. more day.
It would be a brilliant day to go for sub boarding. The what is it? Stand up
pedalboard.
Yeah. So, but it's no good. Anyway, so heading back to work tomorrow. I think we're closing out what's going to be 1.12 this week, with SharePoint framework, and targeting that one. So it's good. Over to Microsoft Teams, but then modernizing the stack has to be there as well. So it's about time. And what else?
V12. Node V12.
Yeah, that's well, or 14. Let's see. So obviously we need to modernize that. Last week we closed out the Ignite recordings, which was good, and a lot of other stuff, which is great, because then you don't have to worry about those things anymore. It's always the stress of, even though you've done it so many times and all of that, but still there's the preparation stress. So this week it's actually clean table. It's really cool. So I don't know other next commitments that I have.
So Ignite is coming next week. Is there any place to go for people who are interested in M365 dev, okay, or M365, well, dev maker announcements, sessions to go to?
I think there will be a blog post later this week on the M365 blog where we will list all of the things. And some of the sessions and some of the videos are pre-recorded and they're only going to be released in YouTube, and some of the sessions are actually live broadcasted. I think that's the new norm of how we're doing these things. But yeah, Ignite is coming week from now, right?
Yes, like, correct. Next week is on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah. And I think we're doing 3 times in a different time zones, broadcasting and presenting and answering things, and then do YouTube videos on top of that. So yeah, should be good.
Cool.
But cool, I think that's it for now. So thank you, Yannick, for joining us. Good discussion. Thank you, Waldeck.
Thank you, Vesa.
Thank you. We'll be back with the next BMP Weekly within a
week.
Week. Yes.
Because it's been weekly, not monthly. Not bi-weekly.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks, Yannick. Thanks, Waldeck. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Bye-bye. Please keep on the feedback coming and use the hashtag BMP Weekly so we know what you're writing. Thank you.